Hey everybody, welcome back to the Bold Sidebar. This is your host, Jeff Horn, talking all things New Jersey Supreme Court, recording this on May 1, 2022. I have three opinions for you, as well as a little bit of a march down the sentimentality road. I had the good fortune of having Judge Mary Catherine Cuff serve as an arbitrator in a civil case in Monmouth County. And got to chat with her, of course, offline a little bit and recalling her service in the New Jersey Supreme Court, temporarily assigned, albeit temporarily assigned from 2012 to 2016, when Justice Walter Timpone was nominated and quickly seated on the New Jersey Supreme Court. Judge Cuff's service, of course, arises in part to the 2010 dispute between the Governor Christie at the time, and Senate President Steve Sweeney in the failure of Governor Christie to reappoint Justice John Wallace. A Harvard Law graduate, had served on the court for several years and would have had under 2 years left to serve until he reached mandatory retirement. That political squabble left a vacancy on the court for literally years. And Judge Cuff served literally on the New Jersey Supreme Court for 4 years, or more than 4 years, participated in over 400 opinions, and in every way served as a justice without the official rank, title, and pay as a justice. So we are heading into that zone again, seemingly without the level of rancor that occurred between Senate President Sweeney and Governor Christie at the time. This seems a bit quieter. However, I remind everyone, we have two vacancies now. So we have five justices with Judge Fuentes up from the appellate division. And Justice Alvin is just a couple of months away from retirement in July of 2012. So we're headed for a third vacancy. And I hope that the powers that be in Trenton get moving. One cannot pick up any New Jersey news source without seeing the hue and cry for more judges in the Superior Court. Some counties have literally one judge to handle all the family work that's coming through. That can be quite a burden and just impossible for a single judge to handle the divorce cases, the domestic violence cases, the non-dissolution cases, child support, custody, and the like. So hopefully some WD-40 can be applied to the process and judges and justices can be nominated, vetted, approved, and seated in short order. Back to Judge Cuff, our arbitrator in a case. Happy to say that the award provided some impetus for the parties to talk and make some significant movement toward a resolution. The award also came in the old school form, where the arbitrator hand writes the decision and the rationale, and Judge Cuff's handwriting is distinct, precise, and, you know, old school script cursive handwriting, which you don't see much anymore. So I was kind of pleased to see it, and you'll have handwriting that's a defining characteristic. It takes you back to if you have a note, or in my case, recipe from a deceased relative. I always like to take a look at my long deceased mother's recipes from time to time. It just reminds me, when you see that handwriting, of a unique style that comes out of each person's hand versus this form, the written form, or the typewritten form. So that's it for the nostalgia piece. Let's get on to the cases. I've got a DWI case, I've got an affidavit of merit case, and a bid case. Let's start with the DWI case. State v. Michael A. Konechny, K-O-N-E-C-N-Y. Mr. Konechny has a DWI or refusal convictions from 1986, 1999, and 2016. Subsequent to his third charge, he's stopped on multiple occasions, in fact, three separate driving while suspended charges. So he's got his refusal, his third DWI related charge, the refusal that he pleads guilty to in 2016, gets a 2-year license suspension and is stopped 3 times driving while suspended. He gets a 180-day statutory mandatory minimum period of incarceration because of his driving while suspended following a second or more DWI-related offense. After pleading guilty but before sentencing, he files post-conviction relief applications on 2 of his earlier convictions, the 2016 and the 1999. Convictions, not the 1986 conviction. And what occurs in the municipal courts are the cases are treated as LORIC applications. State v. LORIC, L-A-U-R-I-C-K. An uncounseled conviction without waiver of the right to counsel is invalid for the purpose of increasing a defendant's loss of liberty. So the policy being, if you have prior DWI conviction, you didn't have counsel, you didn't have the proper notification and made a knowing voluntary waiver, that conviction will not be counted when you are sentenced, and hence because of subsequent DUIs headed for jail. The focus here is uncounseled and did not waive the right to counsel. Here, Konechny's applications in the Middletown and Union Beach municipal courts dealt with his allegation of ineffective counsel, not uncounseled, but that his counsel was ineffective. And so those applications fit under the standard post-conviction relief criteria. In both cases, orders issued granting Konechny LORIC relief, treating his prior convictions as uncounseled rather than perhaps the result of ineffective assistance of counsel. So you get to the 1999 conviction, and Konechny must comply with the requirements of PCR, that the PCR application be filed within 5 years of the conviction. Here he's filing in 2018 off a 1999 conviction. He did not make a claim of excusable neglect, and hence he was time barred on that one. So he's not getting LORIC relief, and he's not getting PCR relief from the 1999 conviction. The court left open the prospect that his 2016 application could be the subject of a remand if he wanted to reform the application in relation to the 2016 conviction. As it relates to his 3 driving while suspended charges, they are upheld. I shouldn't say that. He pled guilty, so he wasn't seeking relief from his guilty plea. He was just seeking relief from the 180 days of imprisonment that he was subject to because of his prior DWI convictions. The court affirmed the findings of the trial court and the appellate division that he was subject to the 180 days. And affirmed that finding and the sentence. The court also, again, hardly misses a chance to tweak a rule. Here, the relevant rule is Rule 7:10-2G that deals with the LORIC relief for prior uncounseled convictions. And the court asks the Municipal Court Practice Committee to propose an amendment to the rule to clarify that 7:10-2G deals with LORIC only. It does not deal with traditional post-conviction relief. The opinion also focuses on the fact that LORIC is not traditional post-conviction relief. Post-conviction relief applications seek the vacation of the finding of guilt. Here, LORIC simply provides relief to an applicant who didn't have counsel when exposed to enhanced penalties, i.e. jail time. Kind of a dense opinion from Justice Peter Louis, unanimous court, 5 justices. Next up is another 5-justice unanimous decision, Troy Haviland, H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D, the Lourdes Medical Center of Burlington County. This is an affidavit of merit case. Justice Solomon wrote the unanimous opinion. Haviland had shoulder surgery and then was going in for an examination, and a radiology technician directed plaintiff to hold weights in a manner contrary to the doctor's instructions. The shoulder is injured again, and Haviland has to have another round of surgeries. Little personal note, I have had both rotator cuffs repaired, brutal surgery, brutal rehabilitation. So I can't imagine wanting to have the surgery, start doing some rehab and checkups, and then have to have the surgery over again. Back to the real issue here. Question is, when a plaintiff files a lawsuit against a licensed facility such as the Lourdes Medical Center of Burlington County, will an affidavit of merit be required? Here, the plaintiff's theory is exclusively on the grounds of vicarious liability, or for those who paid attention to the Latin in law school, respondeat superior. Here, the technician is not a licensed person. The facility is a licensed facility. The plaintiff proceeded on grounds of vicarious liability and claimed that since the tortfeasor was not a licensed person, no affidavit of merit was required. The trial court dismissed the plaintiff's complaint for failure to serve an affidavit of merit, AOM. We got a lot of letters in today's cases. The appellate division reversed. And looking at the statute that requires that an affidavit of merit be filed when the tortfeasor is a licensed person. So here you go, AOM requirement applies only where one, a plaintiff's claim is for personal injuries, wrongful death, or property damages. Two, the personal injuries, wrongful death, or property damages result from an alleged act of malpractice or negligence. And three, the acts are carried out by a licensed person in the course of practicing the person's profession. Here, the unnamed radiology technician is not a licensed person, and the hospital, the Lourdes Medical Center, may be subject to liability, vicarious liability, under the respondeat superior doctrine, and there is no requirement that an affidavit of merit be filed when the tortfeasor was not licensed. So there you go. Affidavit of merit law is one of the areas of law that continues to develop. And here's another tweak, shall we say, in the realm of malpractice and negligence of licensed facilities where the actor is an unlicensed person. Interesting. Next one is a bid case. Dobco, the Bergen County Improvement Authority. The court issued a per curiam opinion, essentially adopting the reasoning of Judge Massano in the appellate division. Justice Albin concurs in part and dissents in part, and I'll get to that. This case is an alphabet soup case. So Bergen County Improvement Authority is referred to in the opinion as BCIA. The BCIA issued an RFQ, request for qualification, for redevelopment of the Bergen County Courthouse. The process would whittle down the candidates to four firms. Nine applied, four were chosen. Dobco was not chosen. Dobco filed a lawsuit claiming that the bid process itself was illegal and that it should be thrown out, essentially. Vice President of Dobco, Hassam Ibrahim, a Bergen County resident, filed essentially the same lawsuit as an interested citizen seeking injunctive relief to toss the bid conclusions. So more alphabet soup. LPCL is the local public contracts law that lays out the requirements for public bidding. The LRHL is the local redevelopment and housing law. And the CIAL is the county improvement authorities law. So the BCIA argued that it was not even required to follow the LPCL because of the other two statutes I mentioned. This project was redevelopment as opposed to more traditional procurement activities, and that the Improvement Authorities Law, CIAL, also applies and does not require that the county, in performing a function under the redevelopment law, follow the strictures of the LPCL. The Supreme Court found that the CIAL explicitly requires that the government entity follow the LPCL and follow the requirements to put out an RFQ and have the process follow the statute's intent, and that there was no relief from the LPCL in either the redevelopment law or the improvement authorities law. The other part of the case is whether a principal, a shareholder, officer of a corporation who took advantage of this bidding process can come in as a now interested citizen and seek injunctive relief. So back quickly to Dobco. Dobco's claims were dismissed. That's affirmed. And the basis is that a bidder cannot participate in the bidding process willingly, and then, when unsuccessful, complain that the bidding process itself was illegal. You wanted to participate in the game, you played the game, you lost the game, then you said the game is illegal. The court was clear and concise on that claim. As it relates to Ibrahim, the court found that Ibrahim can participate in that Ibrahim is a resident of Bergen County and therefore has an interest. However, the court requires that Ibrahim file a certification and any officer, shareholder of a bidder file a certification indicating that the plaintiff is acting independently, not taking direction from a bidder who would otherwise be barred from pursuing a claim, and that the individual is personally paying for legal fees and costs, not being reimbursed by the unsuccessful bidder. And if the plaintiff fails to file the certification, the court will dismiss the plaintiff's claims. So it sets down the rule for this case and sets down the rule in general going forward. Justice Alvin concurs with the determination in terms of the merits and the imposition of a certification requirement, but dissents on permitting Ibrahim to pursue his claim while the company is barred. Equity would also require barring individuals that were officers of the company, as companies are directed by the officers. And it's a matter of semantics when the officer can pursue an independent parallel claim. As Justice Alvin stated, if Dobco wins, it wins. If Dobco loses, it can still win. A company can only act through its officers. So this is splitting hairs. Interesting issue. When big public money is at stake, bidders pull out all the stops to try to prevail, to knock out the competitors, and to wrangle a bid. This is an interesting sideshow to usual bidder disputes. Okay, that's it for today. Thanks everyone for listening. Appreciate it very much. And I will check back as soon as there are some more cases. And, of course, as soon as we've got some new justices to talk about. Bye-bye.